This is 1A. I'm Celeste Headlee, broadcasting remotely from my house in Maryland. Most Americans worry the coronavirus will interfere with November's election. A new poll from the Pew Research Center shows that nearly 3 out of 4 support the use of mail-in voting for the 2020 race. There are currently 5 states that conduct elections entirely by mail, but holding a presidential election through the post is complicated and costly. It requires months of preparation. In fact, if state governments want to switch entirely to vote by mail in November, they need to start preparing now. Today, we'll explore the pros and cons of mail-in voting and what's needed to get a system up and running nationwide. The state of Iowa is already taking steps. The Secretary of State's office has mailed absentee ballot requests to every eligible voter in Iowa. Joining us now to talk more about this is Kevin Hall. He's the communications director for Iowa's Secretary of State, Paul Pate. Secretary Pate was scheduled to join us now, but had to cancel last minute due to illness. Kevin, you've graciously stepped in to tell us what your office has been up to, and we thank you for that.
Thank you for having me, and Secretary Pate does send his apologies, but he's a little under the weather this morning.
Have absentee ballot requests started to come back?
They have. They started landing in Iowans' mailboxes this week. And in fact, in Iowa, you can request an absentee ballot beginning 120 days before an election, but the period for when auditors can send the actual ballots to the voters just started last week, and the response has been enormous. We've already had more than 50,000 requests come into auditors' offices and already go back out with the ballot being sent back out to the voters. So we are way ahead of where we would normally be a primary election at this point.
How many do you normally get? 50,000 seems incredible. How many? What's the average?
I think that is already going to surpass what we did in 2018. And usually in Iowa, it's about 40% for any election. For the 2016 general election, we had about 700,000 of our voters voted by absentee and had about 1.6 million vote overall in the 2016 general election. So usually it's around 40%. We anticipate for the June primary, it'll be much higher than that. And we're encouraging absentee voting from home because of the pandemic and to encourage, you know, social distancing. But we will still have the polls open on election day.
You will have the polls open. I wonder what kind of preparation you are taking for this incredible popularity in mail-in voting. Of course, the Wisconsin primaries that took place April 7th, they were chaotic, I think is the nicest way to say that. That happened just as coronavirus cases were skyrocketing. The state was widely criticized. The mail-in votes themselves were very confusing. Local officials didn't know what were the rules were and which ballots to accept and which weren't. How are you preparing for that kind of change?
Well, we took a few steps immediately to address the situation. A couple things Secretary Pate did was he, through an emergency directive, extended the absentee voting period from 29 days ahead of the June 2nd primary to 40 days. And they gave not only the voters, but the county auditors more time to process all of the requests and the ballots. And the auditors were heavily in favor of that temporary one-time accommodation just to help, because they have to practice social distancing as well. And, you know, being cooped up in that office and stuffing a lot of ballots and envelopes, yeah. They needed more time. So we moved the period from 29 days to 40 days for the June primary. We also mailed absentee ballot request forms to every active registered voter, and again, to encourage social distancing. So those were a couple immediate emergency directives that Secretary Pate put in place because of the pandemic, because we want our voters to be safe and we want to have a clean, smooth election where everybody has a chance to cast their ballot who wants to participate in the June primary. And in Iowa, our primaries are closed, so only Democrats can vote for Democrats and Republicans can vote for Republicans in the primary. But we want to make sure they all have that opportunity.
But the Secretary of State, Paul Pate, has at least mentioned the possibility of mailing out ballots to every registered voter for the general election in November. Is that still on the table?
You know, as election officials, we consider all scenarios. We have to be kind of risk managers. You have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. At this point, we are not looking at doing that for the general election. We're hoping, as with everyone, that the pandemic goes away as soon as possible. But it is something we felt we had to do for the June primary. But at this time, we do not plan on doing that for the general election.
But in most cases, secretaries of state are nonpartisan. They serve all voters regardless of whether what party they are or not having a party. And yet mail-in That's voting right. has become a partisan issue. Secretary Pate is a Republican, but he is leading the charge to get more access to mail-in voting. Why do you think this issue has become particularly partisan?
Well, I will tell you from an Iowa perspective, a lot of voters don't trust mail-in voting. It's just voters are, some of them, they feel more confident going to the polls on election day, writing their vote on a paper ballot. We use paper ballots in Iowa, and putting in the machine. And we want voter confidence to be high. It's very important. Voters need to feel safe and secure and know that their vote will count. So not everyone trusts the mail. And experts, I think, a lot of them will say there is more potential for fraud through absentee voting than there would be by voting at the polls with a paper ballot. Again, voter confidence is very important, and we want to give our voters options. In Iowa, we've had absentee voting, no-fault absentee voting has been available for many years, and a lot of people take advantage of it. It's usually been, as I mentioned earlier, about 40% for every general election, and usually that holds true for the primaries as well. But you have to have options, and you have to listen to the voters as well.
Although, Kevin, sorry, but I mean, polls show that the American support from all different points of view is overwhelmingly in support of mail-in voting. And you and I both know the statistics that fraud isn't really a serious issue, either from mail-in voting or for in-person voting. So I wonder, how does this discussion go in your office in terms of whether or not, you know, this becomes a permanent thing that we need to open up access to mail-in voting more so than in the past?
Well, and that's what we did for the June primary, because we felt it was important and we wanted to make sure everybody has that opportunity to vote. So, again, as risk managers, you have to consider every scenario. But yeah. If Iowa were to make a change like that, that would need to be something that would need to be done through the legislature, not through the Secretary of State's office. And the legislators, of course, would hear back from the voters and get the voters' response. And you have to remember, in Iowa, we're first in the nation for the caucuses. I'm not going to get into the caucus mess that happened this year.
Yeah, that was chaos.
That was not our office. That was run by the political parties. But in Iowa, people like being there in person and participating. And, you saw that with the candidates and all the events that they had leading up to the caucus and the people that went out on caucus night. And that's been a tradition in Iowa for many years. And for a lot of voters, it's a tradition to go to the polls. And we've heard some voters, although we're encouraging voting absentee from home for the June primary, we're hearing from a lot of voters who say, no, I want to go to the polls on election day.
In the 30 seconds we have left, how confident are you, Kevin, that the mail-in voting is going to be counted quickly enough to get to satisfy your voters who like quick results?
I think voters might need to be a little bit more patient with the June primary, the rush that we're getting right now is not as heavy as we usually have for the general election. We have hundreds of thousands of absentee votes for the general election, so I don't foresee it being a huge problem for the June 2nd primary.
Kevin Hall is the communications director for Iowa's Secretary of State, Paul Pate. Kevin, thank you so much. Coming up, can we have a nationwide mail-in voting system by November? We'll talk to Ryan McCarthy of ProPublica and Bina Venkatraman, sorry about that, Bina, of the Boston Globe. They'll tell us more about the safest ways to vote during a pandemic. I'm Celeste Headlee. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom makes it easy for Americans to set up their estate plans without leaving their homes. Don't know the difference between a last will or living trust? What about an advance healthcare directive? LegalZoom can help. They're not a law firm, but you can get started quickly online and also get advice through their network of independent attorneys. Learn more about estate plans and how you can speak to an attorney for advice at LegalZoom.com.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Hey, it's Guy Raz from NPR's How I Built This, and each week on the show during this unprecedented crisis, I'll be asking some of the top founders and builders how they're dealing with the economic impact of the coronavirus and hear about some of the ways they're pivoting to fight it. Subscribe or listen now to How I Built This.
This is 1A. I'm Celeste Headlee. We're discussing mail-in voting for the November elections. Joining me now to explain the logistics of coordinating a national mail-in voting effort is Ryan McCarthy. He's an editor of ProPublica. Ryan, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Bina Venkatraman. She's editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Bina, it's nice to have you as well.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
I want to read you an email that we got from Anne in Berlin, Germany. She's with a group that's called American Voices Abroad Berlin. Anne says, Americans who live abroad always vote by mail, and Americans who live in the 50 states should be able to do so as well. We of American Voices Abroad Berlin, like all other U.S. citizens who live abroad, have had trouble-free experience with absentee ballots for many years. This is how we vote. While several states have already expanded their vote by mail options, we'd like to see every state and the federal government pass vote by mail legislation. So, Ryan, if we have been doing vote by mail for so long, why has it become such a complicated and, in many cases, controversial issue now?
Well, I think the reason why you're seeing so much concern about this right now is that vote by mail systems just aren't easy to build. States like Colorado, Utah, and Washington have had years to build up their systems. And, you know, you just can't build a large operation to send out millions of absentee ballots to your local residents overnight. And some of the problems that we've run into over the years have been when states have built systems like this in a haphazard way or with uneven standards across counties, or that can affect demographics unequally. So I think the real concern, frankly, is not whether or not vote by mail can work, but how soon it can work and whether or not it can be adapted in mass by the general election in the fall.
A lot of our listeners have really strong feelings about mail-in voting and whether or not they would vote by mail in November. Here is what some of you had to say.
Hi, I'm Greg from Rockford, Illinois. I've been voting by mail for a number of years. It allows me to do research on the candidates. I feel like a stronger, more powerful voter with greater confidence in my selections.
Hey, this is Bronson in Bellingham, Washington. They've been mail voting here for a long time. I can't for the life of me now understand why every state doesn't have the option for mail-in voting. It should be done everywhere.
I'm Bernice in Westlake, Ohio. I have been voting by mail for more than 25 years. I highly recommend it and don't have to worry about the weather or how to get back and forth. It's a wonderful way to do it.
Hi, this is Brian calling from Royal Oak, Michigan. I think there should be no excuse absentee mail-in voting, especially now, because nobody should have to choose between staying healthy and voting.
My name is Patty, and I 100% support mail-in ballots. It is logical, it is safe, and it is apolitical. I hope our country does the right thing. Thank you.
So, Ryan, polling shows that most Americans agree with our listeners. They widely approve of mail-in voting. Has opinion changed on this in recent months?
I don't think so. I think you still see, I think a recent poll from Pew showed that 70% of voters favor allowing anyone to vote by mail, but there's a big partisan split in that. And, you know, 87% of Democrats approve of allowing anyone to vote by mail and just 50% of the GOP. So I think whether or not, you know, it's popular in the aggregate, this has become a partisan issue. And that may delay some states from setting up effective vote by mail systems. In a story that we published today, you know, we found that in Wisconsin's sort of rush to increase absentee voting in their chaotic election just about a month ago, you know, that left local clerks not only inundated with processing thousands of absentee ballots, but also with unclear guidance on how to count vote by mail ballots and absentee ballots. And I think that's sort of the nightmare scenario that election experts really see here. And one election expert compared this to the Bush versus Gore problem, a problem in which varying standards about whose vote gets counted gets applied to absentee ballots and vote by mail. I think the worry there is really if states rush to expand this and don't do it the right way, you could see a ton of chaos, a ton of litigation, and just a ton of concerns about folks being intentionally or unintentionally disenfranchised.
And Bina, I spoke with someone from the Iowa Secretary of State's office just a moment ago. We talked about the request for more funding from the federal government. Is mail-in voting more expensive than in-person?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think it really is a patchwork at the state level. But in terms of making the transition to mail-in voting, it's quite expensive. And by a lot of estimates, if you look at the Brennan Center for Justice study of this issue, it's on the order of magnitude of billions of dollars that would be required to actually shore up states for the November election to do large-scale mail-in voting, as well as to expand absentee voting in cases where it's not going to be default universal mail-in voting, as well as early voting. And right now, the latest stimulus package passed in late March provided about $400 million in federal funding to the states for this, which is really, by most experts' estimates, really not enough to support states in doing this. Now, some of the costs that are involved include just the basic cost of postage to cover the cost of voters getting their ballots back in, which we know if you don't include postage, you'd be surprised at how turnout lags. It also requires personnel to stuff ballots, to look at and process ballots. It requires printers and scanners for these kinds of ballots, which are a shift from what the norm is. So I think if we're looking towards the next debate on Capitol Hill around a spending bill, it's going to be important if states want to move to more mail-in voting, more no-excuse absentee voting and early voting, that states get shored up by the federal government.
There is a push and pull, though, Bina, between the federal government and the state, and not just in terms of costs. But one of the issues in the past, and this is something that Ryan talks about in his piece, where he says it matters who your local clerk is, right? In that there needs to be some kind of uniform rules over how you compare signatures on the ballots, whether the postmark matters, if you can send it in late. How is that discussion going in terms of who makes these decisions?
Absolutely. So Ryan's pointing out that in an ideal world, states would gradually evolve to these kinds of systems to scale up on the course of in the course of weeks or months to universal mail-in voting is going to create a lot of problems. That said, the alternative, I think Wisconsin is a great cautionary tale for us of what happens if you have a major public health crisis, and by public health experts' estimates, including Tony Fauci, we could see a resurgence of COVID-19 in the fall that could be, perhaps could even be worse than what we're seeing now with the seasonal flu. And not only that public health risk, but the perceived public health risk. So for poll workers to show up and work the polls. So what we saw in Wisconsin with crowded polling places, people standing in line in close proximity, really is not a good option either. So I think we're in a situation where states that have a patchwork of legislation, a patchwork of readiness to move to these kinds of systems, where they could systematize how local counties tally those ballots, how they process those ballots to avoid problems like the hanging chad problem of the famous 2000 election Bush v. Gore. That would be ideal that states start to work on that right now. In fact, start to work on it yesterday. We have about 6 months to the November election. And so I think it's really important that state secretaries of states and legislatures be looking for ways to enable that kind of more uniform tallying to try to anticipate some of these scenarios that could happen on election day.
And we get this question, Bina, also from Alan in St. Louis, who says, look, we did our census by computer if we wanted to. Why can't we vote online?
Well, it's a great question. I think we are not there yet in terms of having the security of systems to vote online. I think there are a lot of questions around cybersecurity, around access. There are still profound broadband access questions in this disparities in this country. And so I think to move to that kind of system on, 6 month timeline would be potentially disastrous for the 2020 election. I think in the long run, certainly we should hope to develop systems that are reliable enough to allow us to vote online. But let's be clear that we don't have currently in the United States a voter fraud problem. Less than 0.1% of votes have some sort of fraudulent origin. So to move to a system that is largely online in order to shore up our elections, we shouldn't create a problem that we don't currently have. So I think it's going to be really important to think about those systems and what new potential problems it could create for our elections that we don't have in the existing system.
Up next, what would an election night look like if everyone nationwide voted by mail in November? We're going to hear more from our guests and from you in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
The biggest story in the world is a science story. And keeping up with all the latest coronavirus research, it's a lot. So on Shortwave, we translate the science you need to know into short daily episodes. Listen and subscribe to Shortwave from NPR.
We're getting a lesson on the ins and outs of mail-in voting with Ryan McCarthy of ProPublica and Bina Venkatraman of the Boston Globe. Ryan, can we talk about what election night might look like if we all mail in our votes, or most of us mail in our votes on in November? That would be a very different general election and very different results coming in, would it not?
Definitely. And I think that the thing to remember about mail-in ballots is not just that you get a ballot, fill it out, and drop it in a Dropbox or put it in the mail, but they're often humans, and sometimes humans and machines, processing these ballots. So that is a manual task. And frankly, that just takes longer. And so I think one thing that election experts and political scientists are sort of preparing for is having several states that increase their vote by mail uptake in the fall for the general election delay their results, perhaps by hours, perhaps by several days, which may put the presidential election, you know, in doubt for a little while. And frankly, just as voters, as an electorate, we're not used to that. In some states, that's a pretty common result. Arizona typically sees its results delayed largely because of this reason. But it's just something we may have to get used to if we move to a more universal vote by mail system. And frankly, it's the worry there is really that it just increases doubt about the legitimacy of the election, even if election officials are doing their fair best to count and moving as fast as they can. That delay, just for some, and particularly partisans, is really going to increase doubt in the system.
So we have received a lot of comments like this one I'm about to read from Brandon. He tweets the following: voting in person is one of the things I'm most proud of. I love it. In 2018 primaries, I could take my young son for the first time, and he got a future voter sticker, and I was so happy. In this day and age, though, we need mail-in voting. Bina, this is something that the Kevin Hall from the Iowa Secretary of State's office talked about as well, this positive feeling people get by going in and filling out that ballot on election day. It becomes a special event for some people. Would that go away with mail-in voting?
I think that's a non-trivial consideration. Voting is a tradition. There's that feeling that we get, the nostalgia we have around voting, the reinforcement that we're doing something that is part of our civic duty, that's part of being a citizen. And I think that that also contributes to voter turnout. If you, again, look at the science around people voting, being able to wear those stickers that say, I voted, seeing people you know in your neighborhood at the polls, it reinforces our willingness to vote and reinforces the norm of voting. And I do think it's a fair concern for people to raise what would happen if we don't have any more in-person voting.
So Conrad in Georgia emails this: as a public health physician, I view it as critical that individuals be able to vote by mail in the face of risking infectious disease, be it coronavirus or influenza. And Ryan, I wanted to put this particular tweet to you. Melissa says, I've never missed voting in person or in any election. How about spreading voting out over a couple of days instead so we can maintain social distancing? When I vote, there is never even a line anyway. And the reason I think this is an interesting idea, Ryan, is because most of us have been to either a Home Depot or a grocery store where they make you, they only allow a certain number of people in, right? What if we did that for voting?
Yeah, I think this is what election officials and experts across the country are kind of racing to figure out, right? Not only how do you count ballots on election day and after with proper spacing and social distancing, but how do you run in-person elections in a way that allows access but also doesn't put voters' health at risk? I think that's a real open question. I think one big debate historically, even outside of, even before the coronavirus pandemic, has been early voting periods. So some states allow 30 days or more for voters to come in and drop their vote off or to vote in person. That's not going to be possible in every state just because it's been such a partisan issue. But yeah. I think you can make a real argument this time around that folks just need more time to understand the rules, more time to come in and vote in person, more time to consider dropping their ballots off. In some states, folks like to hold their mail-in ballots to the last minute, collect all the possible information about the election, and then drop them off the day of the election. And I think election officials are going to have to think hard about ways to, you know, maybe encourage folks to vote a little bit earlier this time. Just because, as we said before, the delays in counting are going to be significant. And you don't want 150, 1,000, 2,000 people in line to drop off their mail-in ballots on election day. That's just, it's annoying for voters, and it's also a potential health hazard.
Yeah, I mean, other people have come up with interesting solutions. My salon is going to open, and you have to stay in your car until they text you and say you can come in. So I'm sure there's other options. But Bina, the one thing Ryan is talking about is allowing more time. And it seems to me that time is something, at this point, we as a nation don't really have. When should we have, if we were going to do mail-in voting, when did those preparations need to start?
Well, it's sort of like that adage, the best time to plant a tree. It was 25 years ago, and the next best time is right now. And so I think we're in a situation where ideally, yes, these plans would have been made months ago, or even, you know, if you're talking about a universal mail-in vote, in many cases, states have had to move to that over the course of more than a year. But we're in extraordinary circumstances. And the alternative, I think, is the cautionary tale we saw in Wisconsin, where you had overcrowded polling places and a public health risk from voting. And voters shouldn't have to choose between those two options. So I think with 6 months away from the November election, states certainly have the opportunity to do a lot to shore up this process. And it probably is going to be a patchwork of solutions. Not every state's constitution will allow them to make default mail-in voting the norm. So they will have to do expanded or no excuse absentee voting, where people still have to request those ballots, or expand early voting. The other thing that can be done here is to delay registration deadlines, as well as make same-day registration possible. So we're living in a time of extraordinary disruption where people are moving and people are maybe not, you know, on top of their registration because maybe they're losing their jobs or they're filing for unemployment insurance. So I think we have to, in times of displacement like this, in times of distress, create ways for people to have more options to register to vote.
So, Bina, we got this tweet from Kathy, who says, I can't believe what I'm hearing. No, in-person voting for millions is not a happy little patriotic jaunt. The people who wait for hours where suppression efforts have closed polling stations and machines are broken, and people wait for hours. Duh. Mail people. So, Bina, there's the situation that we're in right now seems to be changing even our attitude toward those election day, I guess, civic duty feelings, good feelings.
I think that's right. And if you look at the recent movement in the polls, the recent AP poll on mail-in voting, it shows a rise relative to 2018 in Americans' support for mail-in voting. And that, when the question is framed in a way where Americans are asked whether if the coronavirus pandemic is a problem, they favor mail-in voting, the percentage of Americans who favor it jumps even higher. So I think people recognize that if it's going to be a choice between their safety, between public health and voting, they'd much rather have this option of mail-in voting. And certainly expanding it is something, you know, our editorial board, the Boston Globe editorial board, editorialized in favor of doing this. And I think it's really important to recognize that we're in a moment economically where state budgets are being decimated by the decline in sales tax because of closed down retail, income tax, and other factors. And so it really is going to take a huge shoring up by the federal government to make it possible for states to do this logistically, to expand mail-in voting. And I think what Kathy's pointing out is that what happened in Milwaukee with voters going to the polling places and there being reduced numbers of polling places in urban, densely populated areas where you should have more polling places open, that was really unacceptable in terms of the choice that those citizens were being presented with in terms of their health or voting. And we can't have a situation where when we're expecting historic turnout in the 2020 election, we're suppressing that turnout, making it hard for people to vote in November in an election where so much is at stake for so many people, frankly, on both sides of the aisle. So I think it's a fair point, and I think it's just speaks ever more to the question of states needing to take action now, of these secretaries of state around the country and state legislatures really needing to be attuned to how to make a voting safe in the fall and not to assume that this is going to get better.
So we got a tweet from Meatloaf, who says, my union with 200,000 members nationwide has our election via USPS. Voted ballots are returned via business reply mail. Process is very secure. Final results of election are tallied within 36 hours. Obviously, the number of members in the union, 200,000, is considerably less than the whole country, but I see your point, Meatloaf. Ryan, before we go, do we suspect that all of this uncertainty over voting is going to depress turnout?
I think the literature on that is unclear, not only because we're in an unprecedented global health pandemic, but just because there's just not a lot of certainty about how this will play out if it's expanded across multiple states at once. I think that the evidence in Wisconsin suggests a few things. I mean, first off, as we've talked about at length here, you have to prepare for these sorts of things. You can't set up a vote-by-mail system at overnight. But I think there is the potential for vote by mail to leave people out and for not everyone to know about the rules. And as these systems grow, that's going to be a really big worry and a challenge, frankly, for, you know, nonpartisan election officials whose job it is to make sure that everyone can vote, knows how to vote, and gets their votes counted.
That's Ryan McCarthy of ProPublica and Bina Venkatraman of the Boston Globe. Thanks so much to both of you. Before we go, for weeks now, we have been making time at the end of every show for your acts of kindness. Today's story comes from Ruth, a teacher in Chicago, Illinois.
I have good friends at my job, and I miss them terribly. I celebrated my birthday on April 8th. I turned 55. I assumed that I would not be receiving the typical flowers, cupcakes, and gift certificate that we all do for each other on birthdays. I was looking forward to a Zoom phone call and being grateful for my health. But I got a floral delivery from my buddies at work. They definitely touched my heart. It was a huge act of kindness. It is a ritual that we celebrate with each other, and we just aren't able to celebrate as we are accustomed to on each other's birthdays. So I'm looking forward to getting back to my friends and my students at Philip Rogers School in Chicago.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Ruth, and happy belated birthday to you. If you have an act of kindness that you want to share, we would love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. We read and listen to all of them. The number again, 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Sharla Freeland and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Celeste Headlee. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.